You're going to hear Tex Williams.
I'm a fella with a heart of gold, with the ways of a gentleman, I've been told. Kind of a fella that wouldn't even harm a flea.
Sounds a lot like boiling soup. Yes.
That invented the cigarette, had to murder that son of a gun in the first degree. Of course, it ain't cause it don't.
Originally written by Merle Travis.
I don't reckon it to hinder your health. I've smoked them all my life, but I ain't.
Is this an anti-smoking song?
The nicotine slaves are
I think so. Yeah, good for him.
Everything's got to stop while they smoke the cigarette. Smoke, smoke, smoke that cigarette.
I know the song. Yeah.
And if you smoke yourself to death, tell St. Peter at the Golden Gate, you hate to make him wait.
You've so at the time,
another cigarette.
Wow. He was ahead of his time.
Yeah,
I would say, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of reasons to not be in favor of smoking, mm-hmm. because, you know, it smells unusual. So it's going to be
unhealthy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but even when people thought it was healthy back then, it was clear you were coughing up junk.
Whereas his main problem seems to be it's interrupting a poker game.
Yes. It's just inconvenient. Do you remember those commercials from growing up? And that's more than anything else the reason why I never smoked, where they would take a linen handkerchief and someone would blow into it. And you'd see like a discolored ring around the handkerchief.
I don't remember those ads. No, I don't remember that one.
It was an advertisement for toothpaste. Mm-hmm. So that thing was, you smoke so bad that you're literally exhaling carcinogens. And you put a napkin up to yourself, you discolor the napkin, you make it gross and yellow.
But it was more to get you to, like...
Yeah, like, don't quit smoking, because it's just doing bad stuff to your teeth. So get that stuff off your teeth with a special...
And don't worry about your lung.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, your lung will be fine.
No, I'm not a smoker. I'm not a cigarette smoker. You know what I do smoke, Jeff?
Do you smoke cigars, Vinny?
As a matter of fact, yes.
You know, I've been waiting for you to ask me to smoke a cigar, but you never have, so I've never been able to take it up. And just last week, I decided, well, it's never going to happen, so I've closed the door on that part of my life. I'm never going to smoke a cigar.
I never said you should smoke a cigar.
Not
this week, I haven't.
No, not this week.
I'm just letting you know that I enjoy a good cigar, a good stogie.
Yeah,
I started smoking cigars when I was 15 years old.
Okay.
You know, and I think it's my dad took a lot of pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to share it with my good friend.
Now,
you know, he doesn't...
How do cigar smokers feel about the word stogie?
I don't know. I use it, though.
Yeah.
I may even be using it incorrectly, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Was stogie a particular brand of cigarette or cigar? Or
yeah.
Like
it might, I don't know. I actually don't know. I just know I like cigarette.
Yeah. It does have a real old-fashioned vibe to it.
But I have to cough right now. It has nothing to do with smoking. Hold on.
Sure.
There we go. That was not because of cigar smoke, then.
No.
No.
No. How often do you smoke cigars?
In the summer, a couple a week. I don't, outside, when it's not warm out, I'm not going to smoke in my house.
Right.
When it gets cold out, I don't even think about it.
Now, something I find unusual about cigars is that...
Wait, hold on. Ahoy, hoy, Jeff.
Ah, ahoy, ahoy, ahoy.
There you go. Okay.
Okay. Something I find unusual about cigars is that you don't light it and then you're done. You need to keep on lighting it every couple of minutes.
No, that's not true.
No?
No. That's a pipe you're thinking of, I think.
Oh. So if you light a cigar, it stays lit the whole time?
Yeah, I mean, every once in a while you might want to, like, you know, because it might be burning unevenly or something like that.
Usually
it just stays lit.
Okay, I thought that it went out and you had to keep relighting it.
No,
but you may reapply heat in order to...
You know so little about our world, Jeff.
No, I don't. Most of what I know is from the movie Hellboy, because Hellboy smokes a cigar.
And he keeps lighting it over and over again?
Yeah, and then he has a Zippo lighter, and Jeffrey Tambor, who's in this movie, by the way, Jeffrey Tambor in the movie Hellboy, like, hits the lighter away, and then takes out a nice case of wooden matches, and says, this is better for flavor, mm-hmm. and holds it up and lights Hellboy's match, or lights Hellboy's cigar. It's a really nice moment.
Did you think to yourself, I could smoke a cigar if Jeffrey Tambor was there?
And if I was a 7-foot-tall hell monster.
Yeah. So, question. I've been asking you to smoke a cigar. You refuse.
Yes.
Jeffrey Tambor shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Says, Jeff, let's have a cigar together.
Ooh. I don't know about Jeffrey Tambor, but this leads into the main story this week. 100 years ago today, the world's greatest comic book artist and the definitive comic book cigar smoker, Jack Kirby, was born.
What if he wants to smoke a cigar with you?
Absolutely. No question about it.
No, okay.
I would smoke a stogie with Jack Kirby.
So all I have to do is go and, like, create Batman.
Jack Kirby did not create Batman. Bob Kane and Bill Finger created Batman.
I know.
Okay. But Jack Kirby created so many other people. Like, we'll start with Captain America. If he did nothing else but make Captain America and then he died, then that would have been enough.
Watch me anger you. I heard he just stole everything from Stan Lee.
Wow. I thought you were going to, like, just make up something fake, and you kind of did, but it's enough truth to the, like, to what people have said that I actually did get angry for a little bit.
I know, that's like a big, the Jack Kirby fans.
Yeah.
You know, they hate when, you know, Stan Lee gets credit on stuff.
Right, and Stan Lee was very big on taking credit for everyone's work, especially nowadays, because
he's alive, so he can.
Yes.
If you outlive anybody, you get to just, hey, you know,
but did you know credit. That his Spider-Man co-creator Steve Ditko is also still alive, also in his 90s, and crazy as a loon. But by crazy as a loon, I mean he became an Ayn Rand reader. Mm-hmm. And then I'm not kidding. All of the superheroes since then were like objectivist superheroes. He had one guy called Mr. A, and Mr. A's...
Is that short for Ayn?
Oh, I hope not. But there is an Ayn Rand philosophy that says A is A, so that was his big thing. A is A.
Yeah.
And he'd say that while punching people out. And I think that was just a way of saying that there is no shades of gray in this world. It's just black and white morality.
I took a class in Ayn Rand.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, when I was in college. One of her students was a professor at TCMJ.
Oh, yeah?
And so I took the class. You need a philosophy class.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, yeah, I'll do this one here. And it was all, like, Ayn Rand people in the class. They all, like, loved Ayn Rand. And this was her student that was... That was teaching it. And...
That's
rough. I couldn't get past this horrible toupee. Like, you know, it's like everyone's just like so wrapped up in him. And I'm like, this guy's a horrible toupee. I can't listen to his philosophy on life.
Did you mention that it was objectively a bad toupee?
Well, maybe. All right. So hold on. What if I said to him, is that a toupee? He'd have to say yes, right? Because the whole point of Ayn Rand is that.
Well, it's not. You're not allowed to lie.
You can't go. That's hair, because then it's.
Yeah, but I think
I could have completely unraveled
the whole objectivist movement.
That's right.
Yes, there would be no 22-year-olds who decided to act like a douchebag after reading Atlas Shrugged anymore.
You know,
all copies would be burned.
Paul Ryan dead. He'd be dead.
What about Rand Paul?
Also dead.
Also
who
dead.
He also wears a toupee, right?
Rand Paul?
Is that a toupee?
It's weird. It looks like my hair when I put way too much like hair gel in because I don't know what I'm doing.
Because I think it has like a little bit of that like the after of the Bosley hair treatment thing.
Yes. It definitely does. You get the feeling it would crunch if you touched it.
Yeah, he just looks like he should be like coming out of a pool and showing you how it's his actual hair. While also talking about a flat tax.
But will it withstand hurricane force winds? Okay, so back to Jack Kirby. If he did nothing else but create Captain America, that would have been his legacy. Captain America was not originally a Marvel comic. It was... Marvel went by a couple of names back then. It went by Atlas and then went by Timely. And I'm trying to remember if it was Atlas or Timely. I think it was Timely. Yes, it was Timely Comics, which would later become Marvel Comics. But he made Captain America, and the very first issue, Captain America is famously punching Adolf Hitler.
Yeah,
which they then tributed in the movie very well by having Captain America be part of like this Bond show. Not James Bond, but like a U.S. war bond show. And they bring out a fake Adolf Hitler and he punches out the fake Adolf Hitler. So he recreates the cover, but he's shown as not doing anything to help the actual war, just the fundraising. And I've always been disturbed by the picture of Bucky on the cover.
Let me see, hold on.
I even now I can't look at it. Because
but why does he look like that? He's like a corpse.
Yeah, it's the inking. Mm-hmm. It's the inking that gives him really chipmunky cheeks and weird eyeballs. He was a great dynamic artist, but there were some individual frames that just, they look weird. So most comic artists are what you would call illustrators, where their style is hard to tell. If I showed you a Batman, unless you were like a really, you know, great, unless you had a great eye, you wouldn't be able to tell me who drew the Batman, because Batman is supposed to look like Batman. There's something called a house style at DC and Marvel nowadays, where you draw according to the house style, unless you're like a superstar artist, in which case you're allowed to keep your own style. Jack Kirby was one of the first superstar artists. He was a true artist, not just an illustrator, and he couldn't hide his style, and he created the craziest crap you could imagine on such a regular basis for like 40 years.
I can see the love you have of this man. Like, yes. You're gushing a little bit.
And he then made romance comics. Like,
I hear it in your voice, the love that you have for him. And hold on.
Yeah.
I'm checking. Erection. You have an erection. Okay.
So he helped create the romance comic, which wasn't really around and isn't around much now. The one that survives the most is Archie. And we think of Archie.
He created Archie?
No, he didn't create Archie. But we think of Archie as like Archie, as its own thing, as like a teenage thing.
Yeah.
But that was basically what romance comics were like. Here's a guy, here's two girls, and they fight over him. But it would normally be a different situation, different story every week. Archie found a way of keeping the same story going for decades and decades.
Was Archie geared towards like men or women?
It was geared toward women.
But why would... Shouldn't it be then that there are two men vying for one woman? Like, wouldn't that be more the fantasy for a female?
Like the Bachelorette.
Yeah, like if instead of it being like, oh, here's a guy with two women after him, instead it's about, yeah, like, you know, a woman fighting with the affection of both Archie and Jughead.
That doesn't seem like a hard call to make.
Well, one is named Jughead. That's
yes.
True.
Yes, and he's like Wimpy of the...
All right, Archie and world. Who's the bad kid?
Moose?
No, not Moose. Nope. There's a kid who's like he's more like Veronica's boyfriend.
Yeah. Oh, Reggie. Reggie.
Yeah, the rich kid.
Yeah.
Reggie the rich kid.
Huh.
So you would think that, you know what, I'm gonna do some artwork. I'm going to make my own romance comics about two men fighting over a woman.
Okay.
It's going to, you know, be, you know, handle the sort of like feminist ideals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people will praise me for my bravery.
That's great. That's just what the world needs.
And my wokeness.
That the only thing the world needs is one more white guy deciding to get into comics. So,
but I'm doing it for women.
Speaking of women, I read far too recently.
Don't brush me off, Jeff.
I should have known this earlier. We'll get used to it, Fembot. I just recently learned that comics in World War II and up and through the 50s had kind of almost an equal readership among men and women.
Really?
And that's one of the reasons why romance comics thrived. And when like the Silver Age of comics began, that wasn't when people started to buy comics. It was basically when women tapped out of buying comics, and there were only the men left, or the boys, and they were moving more towards boy-friendly stuff. So they thought, well, we'll try bringing back superheroes, which was popular in the 40s, but not since then, not really. And there were, like, you know, crime comics and westerns and war and horror.
And horror, yeah. Oh, I used to watch Tales from the Crypt as a kid, so I know those.
Yeah. Yeah,
does Jack Kirby have anything to do with those?
No, but he, because Marvel was under the same rules that EC did, was to stop making regular horror, that's when they started to make what was called Big Enormous Monsters, or BEMs. So if you go to a real Marvel fan and say BEM, the Marvel fan will know you were talking about a Jack Kirby-style Big Enormous Monster. And Groot is one of those. Groot from Guardians of the Galaxy, mm-hmm, was originally like a tree monster. There's also Sprague the Living Hill. There's It the Living Colossus. I don't know if Zax the Energy Monster was from the 50s or not, if he counts as a big, enormous monster. But there were a lot of kind of dumb things.
So let's just go, like, that sounds like a Marvel movie opening. Go on the line and opening night. Throw out Big Enormous Monster and see if anybody responds.
Yes. Yeah, just ask what BEM stands for. And if they don't know the answer, beat the hell out of their fake nerd ass. By the way, I should mention that we have both come back from vacation recently.
Yes.
Yes. And you got to be in the path of the totality of the eclipse that went on.
No, we were at like 90%.
90%? Oh, that's better than New Jersey. New Jersey was at 70%.
No, and you know what, though? All right, so it was 90%. Uh-huh. And it was still fairly bright out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even at 90%. I was like, this is not that impressive.
I was trying to, like, picture what it would be like to have some of the, you know, some of our life-giving sun obscured. And I realized, oh, I've seen this before. On an overcast day.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it felt like, an overcast day. I was hoping that would get dark and it'd be looting, but no.
No, and I was told that the birds would be all confused, but the birds weren't confused.
No,
the birds
were fine. I had my glasses. I had my special glasses.
Yeah, I will say
that. So I got to see that. But
the quality of the light was different. Mm-hmm. And I got to see it three different ways. I borrowed a friend's glasses, so I was able to look up and see the eclipse as it was happening. And I made the cereal box thing. Did you make the cereal box?
No, I had real glasses.
Okay. The cereal
box. I thought the cereal box thing, they said, no, never do this, you'll go blind.
No, the cereal box was the exact opposite. It was like the wimpiest way to watch, because you poked a hole in a piece of tinfoil you had over one half of your cereal box, and you looked into the other half. So you looked through your hole at the bottom of the cereal box, and then you saw a pinprick of light from the sun, and you could see that the pinprick of light was turning into like a C shape.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the extent of it. So as soon as you looked in that, you're like, this is dumb. I'm going to look in the sun.
What type of cereal did you use?
I used Hannaford brand cornflakes, because I went on vacation in Maine, and the supermarket we went to did not have Kellogg's cornflakes. They only had its own store brand of cornflakes. So we bought it, and my kids, who are very picky eaters, refused to eat it. So all week long, I ate Hannaford brand cornflakes.
Was there a discernible difference between this and Kellogg?
Yeah, you could tell it was store brand cornflakes, but all those store brand cornflakes kind of taste the same.
Your kids are spoiled.
I feel like if something really bad happened and I like snapped and yelled at them and said, "We're poor, this is the only food we have. If you don't eat it, you're gonna starve," then I think they would be quiet and eat it, and
but it would take a total like hissy fit meltdown on your part.
Yes. Plus the threat that the world was falling apart and we're gonna have to move out and eat the cat and stuff like that. But until then, I like to give them a good life. And I think everyone is spoiled in a slightly different way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there were things I was spoiled about. Like every day, every afternoon when I came home growing up, we had popcorn. And I thought that was just something everyone did. And popcorn was no big deal. When we went to the movie theater, we didn't eat popcorn because popcorn was at home all the time. And we made it in a special popcorn maker, and we melted butter in a little container on top and poured it over.
Oh, I remember those, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I brought one to college thinking I'm going to have popcorn all the time, and I'd never used it once.
Did you think you were going to be the popcorn guy of the dorm? Like, oh, man, wait until I break out the popcorn machine. You know,
I didn't, but I thought
it was batting the women away. And
I thought it would get more use than it did. I brought a blender also thinking, well, you know, mixed drinks are a thing. I don't think we used a blender once. I just had to clean pie off of it one time because at the end of the year, some students run out of money on their meal card. Yeah. Other students have too much money. So I had too much money. So I bought a cream pie, and I kept it in a drawer and then gave it to another roommate who then hit a third roommate in the face with it. But it turns out when you hit someone in the face with a cream pie, the cream pie just goes all
It doesn't just stay in the pot and on their face. In fact, the three students usually didn't even use cream.
They didn't?
No.
Was it like whipped cream? Or
It was shaving cream.
Shaving
cream. Because whipped cream would melt underneath the lights.
Yes. Yes. So we spent about 2 hours cleaning up the kitchen because everything needed to be totally washed.
Just because of one pie.
Yeah. And also we found out that the way you hit someone in the face with a pie is not that different from slapping them.
There's blood involved too.
Yeah. Yeah. So the third roommate was down for about 45 seconds, and I think 40 of it was, I just got the hell slapped out of me.
And the pie? What's going on?
Yeah, and the last five was, I'm also humiliated.
You know, I went to the same college as you. I don't remember them selling giant cream pies.
It was only in one place. It was in the Commons. Mm-hmm. They had a little bakery in the Commons.
With cream pie. I don't remember this.
Yeah. I think they only had it for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was probably mainly used to...
For slapstick purposes?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And yeah.
Have you ever been hit with a pie?
I have.
You
actually,
have?
Yeah.
I have not. I've helped be on the throwing end of it, but I've never been on the receiving end.
Well, that's my brand of comedy, of course.
Yes. Yeah.
If anybody out there ever wants to come see me do stand-up, it's just me getting hit with a pie.
Just one pie.
Yeah, very soupy sales.
They move it very slow.
Mm-hmm.
You would think there'd be multiple pies if you're going on for 45 minutes. No, just the one. So, back to Jack Kirby. His big claim to fame was in the Silver Age when he was working for Marvel and he created a huge raft of characters. Okay, so he made the Fantastic Four and he drew something like 111 issues.
Mm-hmm.
Stan Lee was writing and they were a true collaborative pair. They worked in what was called the Marvel style. The way most comic artists and writers worked was how you would imagine, where someone would say, okay, we're going to start with a splash page, and here's what all the characters are doing and what they're saying, and the second page is four panels, and the first one should be a rectangle, and here's what's going on, the second one should be a rectangle, here's what's going on, and third and fourth are little, here's what's going on. But Stanley didn't work like that. He gave a very rough outline to Jack Kirby, saying, we're going to bring the Mole Man back, and he's going to be sad because he needs a girlfriend and he's going to kidnap the invisible girl because he wants to marry her, and then they're going to go on a rescue mission to get her back.
This is the second episode in a row where you've talked about the Mole Man.
I have Mole Man on my mind.
Is it Mole Man or are there Mole Men?
There are Mole Men, but they're called Moloids. The Mole Man is human, but he's the ruler of...
Of moles.
Of moles. Of the Moloids.
It's a worthless...
And he lives on Monster Island, too.
What can you do with moles?
Moloids. You are disrespecting the Moloid American community by just...
Oh, those are like pet. They're like half man, half mole.
I'll pull up a picture of a Moloid for you. Because it's just absurd that you don't know what a Moloid is. So these little yellow guys are Moloids.
Oh, they're more like demon-y looking things.
Yeah, they're kind of minion-y.
Mm-hmm.
If you can imagine like a 5'4" like skinny gym rat decides to dress up as a minion just by putting body paint on and weird Kanye West glasses and then going around in like a loincloth and you say, look, I'm a minion. Like, no, you're not. I can see you're trying to be a minion.
What do they have to do? What do they have to do with moles? Is it they live underground? Is that why?
No, their names are Moloids and they're small. Here's many of them fighting the
spectrum. So why is he Mole Man? Is it?
Because he lives underground. He is the Mole Man. Everyone else is just along for the ride.
Does he dress like a mole? Is
no.
Is he like a snout?
He does kind of have a bit of a snout, but that's just the unfortunate of the Mole Man's life.
Now, was that a real story? Was he actually looking for love?
That was one of the stories, yeah. So Stanley would give that story to Kirby. Kirby could make up to 6 to 8 pages a day. He was incredibly prodigious in terms of drawing and drafting. And he was also coming up with the story as he was going along. So he was able to pace to figure out what he wanted the splash page to be, what he wanted to do panel to panel. And when he was done with that, he'd give it to Stan Lee. And Stan Lee wasn't just being lazy and not giving a more full plot outline to Kirby. He knew that Kirby would be able to take the bare bones of the story and flesh it out into a story that you could read without any sort of dialogue at all. And Stan Lee would then add dialogue to liven things up. And he felt like a throwback to the vaudeville era. So everything ended in exclamation points.
Mm-hmm.
I think I read a Fantastic Four comic and I decided to count to see how many periods there were, and there was not a single period. Every single line, everything everyone said was with an exclamation point at the end. Even when there's like no fighting. It's just people sitting around a table talking, and it's all just shouting at each other.
Now, what's the? I made mention before. I said, "Oh, that You know, he stole it from Stan Lee. There is conflict. I know that.
Yes, because Jack Kirby was a freelancer. He was working for hire. And there was a little note on the back of his checks where if he wanted to cash the checks, he needed to sign them. And by signing the checks, he signed over all of his rights to all his creations to Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
And his family, I think, was interested in suing, and he may have gotten some sort of settlement. I'm not up on this stuff, because this is the sort of comics that I'm not interested in. The history of the spurned, angry creators later in life.
See, that's what I like more.
That's
Alan Moore.
Like Alan. who was exactly one of those guys.
Yeah, no, yeah. I like reading that more.
So, let me tell you, just
very little interest in the Mole Man, to be honest with you. I can't lie.
Well, you keep on bringing up the Mole Man. There's so much other stuff Jack Kirby has done. Okay, just in Fantastic Four alone, he introduced Uatu the Watcher, Ego the Living Planet, Doctor Doom, the Silver Surfer, Galactus, the Inhumans, the Black Panther. Khazar. No, not Khazar. Khazar was
from. I know about half these characters you're mentioning.
Yeah. Well, you know, all of them have become like. Like movie stars, or have been shown up in movies.
But see, I've watched the Marvel movies. I may not know that these are. Like, you probably go and you're like, oh, they referenced this, and you get all excited.
Yes.
I don't know this stuff. It doesn't mean anything to me.
Yeah. Well, you know Black Panther, for instance.
Yes.
Yes, because he was in the newest Captain America movie. Yeah. He's a guy who's kind of dressed like a cat.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of Batman-y. And Black Panther's thing was that he's from the nation of Wakanda, which is a fictional African country. And Kirby decided that Wakanda was going to be like a rich developing nation instead of a poor developing nation. So it had incredible wealth with this fake metal called vibranium. And Black Panther, who had no true superpowers, he was just like stealthy and agile, was able to defeat the entire Fantastic Four all by himself. And for the introduction of, like, basically the first black superhero, to have him with no powers defeat the Fantastic Four was amazing. And
racism was over after that.
Yes, it was totally over.
Good.
Jack Kirby did it himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he also invented the X-Men and Magneto. And Jack Kirby was originally Jacob Kurtzberg. So he was a Jewish guy. And the Thing was Jewish, but they didn't bring it up in the comics for decades and decades.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to find a picture of the Thing with a yarmulke on, which is one of the greatest pictures in the
world. They exist, all right.
Yes, finally they brought that in. Because the Thing was considered Jack Kirby's alter ego. You know how certain creators have alter egos?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Thing was his alter ego. Like the scrappy New York tough guy who's not that tall but is tough as nails, smoking a cigar all the time. Like a big softy at heart. That was Jack Kirby. He was a short guy. He was only 5'4" or so. And the Thing was originally...
Wait, the thing is short also? I always thought he was like a giant.
The thing,
I always thought he was a BEM.
You got it right.
Yeah.
Congratulations. He was originally drawn as a Rocky Man, but not a big Rocky Man. It's just like a regular guy got turned into rocks, but you're not any taller than you were before. You're just made out of rocks.
Mm-hmm.
But as artists drew him over the years, he just got bigger and bigger because they wanted to have Hulk
things. Yeah, he was like Hulk size.
Yeah, and then he became Hulk size. Now he's like a 10.5 feet tall and he'll destroy your sofa if he sits on it.
Mm-hmm.
But originally when they cast Michael Chiklis, that was perfect. Because Chiklis is like a medium-sized guy.
Mm-hmm.
And they just made him all Rocky. He was one of the best parts of the Fantastic Four movie. He was exactly how I imagined him, exactly how the Thing has been written for 30 years. The movies themselves are not very good, but that's not the fault of Chiklis.
Mm-hmm.
Chiklis, as always, is perfect. So our Nickelodeon this week... Since we've talked about the X-Men a little bit, we've talked about the Fantastic Four a whole lot, we've talked about Captain America, we haven't talked about Hulk. So I am going to make Hulk the Nickelodeon this week.
And he's a Jack Kirby creation.
He is a Jack Kirby creation. And I'm not even going to go with Incredible Hulk, which is the Hulk that Edward Norton was that ties in with the rest of the Marvel movies.
I like that one. I know a lot of people don't like that
movie. You and I saw that together.
Did we?
We went to Rutt's Hut and Clifton, and then we went to see that.
Oh, yeah. All right. I knew I didn't see it alone.
Yep. Okay. Saw it with you. But I want to pick the weird one from 2003, when they still didn't know how to make superhero movies, so there was just a whole lot of crying.
Well, that's when we're like, Hulk's not even in it, right?
Hulk's not in it very much, no.
Yeah.
And they made up Hulk dogs, which is not a thing from the comic. They decided, oh, we need a villain to fight. Someone who you'd really want to see being beaten up. Why not? Dogs. Let's kick dogs for 10 minutes. That'll really get him on the audience's side. I have not shown that film to my daughters or even let them know that it exists.
They'd be upset. But yeah. The dog aspect, yeah.
Right. That it's mostly a movie about Hulk choking out dogs. And I don't even remember if the dogs got upset or if why they existed. Like couldn't you come up with a better villain than a Hulk dog?
A cat.
Yeah, or some animal you don't like.
Yeah, I saw that one in theaters.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the Ang Lee one, right?
That's the Ang Lee one, yeah. Where there's a lot of weird transitions. Instead of just, like, cutting from one shot to the next, they would, like, burn up the film, or they'd have, like, a palm tree zoom across the screen. And I guess it was to make it look like the same way that there's weird layouts in comics.
I'm trying to remember the reason. Hulk really, we're not exaggerating, Hulk's like not in it much, right?
No, he's not in it very much at all. Partly that's because they didn't have the budget. And they still don't have the budget. In Avengers, Hulk's in it for I think like 8 minutes. And they had to fight for those 8 minutes. And one of the best parts of Avengers comes from the fact that they didn't have enough money to make another 30 seconds of Hulk. Do you remember the scene where Loki is about to, like, talk to Hulk or do something, and Hulk just picks him up and, like, ragdolls him all around? There was supposed to be a showdown where Loki turns into 6 different Lokis, because that's his power, and Hulk is able to figure out which one is real and then grab him, but they didn't have the budget for Hulk to be confused for 30 seconds, so they just went right to Hulk ragdolling him all around, which was a much better choice.
Why is Hulk more expensive to make than any of the other characters? Like why would it be more expensive to draw a cartoon Hulk versus a cartoon Iron Man flying? I don't understand that. Why is he more...
Yeah, because there's so many moving pieces in the Iron Man suit, especially when like they take it off him and you see all the little servo motors and such.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's just this that it doesn't look like the 2003 Hulk.
This sounds like bullshit. I got to admit, I'm sniffing bullshit on this one.
Maybe it's all just a scam by the special effects companies, where they say, oh, you want 30 seconds of Hulk? It's going to cost you $3.1 million. It's like, really? It's like an Instagram filter. Just press a button, we have it right away. Shh, don't tell them. $3.1 million.
And they know that because people want the Hulk, they can scam you good.
Right. And the movies we're watching now are super easy to
make. So this is why there's no Hulk solo movie, because it would cost like $400 billion to make.
Yes, unless they wanted to go the Ang Lee way and have 3 minutes of Hulk in a Hulk movie,
mm-hmm.
which I don't think they want.
Well, remember occasionally like Hulk, you see Hulk's hand?
Yeah.
Or his foot would come out of a yeah. or something, you know?
Or you could do the Hitchcock thing where like he's about to turn into Hulk and then you just turn to show the reaction shot of someone.
What if you just did like the old Mufarino style and just get like a big dude to paint him?
That would work too. I would be okay with that.
Me too.
Yeah. I'm surprised they don't do that more often. They did try to do that in that Marvel show Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where there was a guy who transformed into a monster, and they just cast a larger actor as the monster. So he was like, I'm going to transform, and then they just brought in like the 6'7" guy who's all made up already, mm-hmm. and then he just pretended to be the same actor. And that worked. And I'm sure that wasn't nearly as expensive as $3.1 million for 30 seconds of Hulk being confused. Okay, on to our quiz. This is actually your idea for a quiz. I want to give you credit for this.
Okay.
Okay, we are going to take obscure Jack Kirby creations, and I'm going to tell you just the name, and you are going to tell me what this character is and what their power is.
Okay.
Okay. We're going to begin with Fin Fang Foom.
Fin Fang Foom, okay. I'm guessing the Fang would be the... the thing that, you know, we're going to focus on here.
Uh-huh.
Or do you go to the fin? He's either a shark or a tiger.
Shark or tiger, good, good.
Tiger shark. He's a tiger shark man.
There actually is a character called Tiger Shark who was like a tiger shark man, exactly what you're thinking of. But no, Fin Fang Foom is a Chinese dragon. In the 1950s, you could make a Chinese dragon and call it Fin Fang Foom, and it wasn't yet racist. Next thing, the Newsboy Legion.
The Newsboy Legion.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, I'm guessing they're journalists of a sort, you know.
Okay.
But do they have a power?
They do not have powers. I was trying to trick you. They were actually just newsboys.
Yeah.
And they ran around and they had a friend named Jim Harper who was like their policeman buddy. And in the 1980s and early 90s, when I started to read Superman, they decided, we like these newsboy guys and their cop friend. So this is how they decided we're going to like bring them back into the current fold.
And then they had their own comic.
They had their own comic in the 1940s.
Like, where they're like, you know, like Woodward and Bernstein kind of thing.
Yeah. So the 1990s Superman said that the Newsboy Legion were real people in the 1940s, and they're all old men now, and they all donated their like blood to science, and science cloned them all. So they all have 10-year-old clones who they decided to dress like 1940s hobos. And they also cloned the policeman, Jim Harper, and gave him superpowers. So now they just run all around solving crimes, and they have, like, a superhero sidekick.
Did they wear, like, the little, like newsboy hats?
Every one of them.
Okay.
Yep.
I'd be disappointed if they didn't.
Okay, next up, Mr. Miracle.
Mr. Miracle.
Mr. Miracle.
All right, well, he has to have, like, all right. Usually people think of Miracle.
Uh-huh.
They think of healing. He can heal people.
Ah. No. No. He is an escape artist. And his name, his real name is Scott Free. He gets Scott Free.
I love when like people have like a very convenient name.
Yeah. Look at this guy's design. It's great.
Yeah.
He's got a full mask, plus he has a cape. And the cape has these giant like 1970s Elvis things that are sticking up and is covering like three quarters of his head, like a dog collar.
It looks like it would make things more difficult for escaping.
Yes. Now the problem with having a Mr. Miracle ongoing comic, because he's never lasted more than six or seven issues, despite how cool he looks.
I imagine you have to keep finding ways to have him be like.
Yes, he is invariably captured and put into a trap. Like you'll never escape from this trap, Mr. Miracle. Okay. Now, everyone, let's leave him alone. And then he would escape. And it helps when he gets teamed up with another superhero, because then he can help the hero escape, or the hero can help him escape. But on his own, there's...
I feel like Miracle has nothing to do with escaping. Like, why wouldn't he just use Scott Free?
Scott Free would be better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Annihilus. Your next Kirby creation is Annihilus.
All right, well, he annihilates things, right?
He annihilates things, yep.
Yeah, I think he's like the power of, like, destruction. He's like big fist that he just, like, pounds and knocks things over.
Okay, kind of close enough. What you missed was that he is a bug man from another dimension.
Oh. He looks like a Green Goblin.
He does kind of look like
a Skeletor. Green
Goblin. Yeah, and his big thing was he controls a whole other dimension. He's trying to break into our dimension and take it over, which he actually did. But he took over like outer space in a big storyline called Annihilation, where he wiped out the Kree and the Shi'ar and the Skrulls. And it was only a ragtag group of the last surviving members of all the races that got together to defeat him. But they never went to Earth. The Annihilation Wave never made it to Earth, because Earth was going through its own stuff back then, and none of the regular Earthbound superheroes wanted to cross over with the storyline, which is something that you just accept that happens in comics. Like, the world will be ending in one comic, then don't even mention it in another. Like, if you were reading Daredevil, you probably didn't know that New York became a penal colony. Or that Asgard was floating over it for a year and a half. Because that happened.
So they all exist in their own world.
Each. You would think that, they would just say, fine, they're all in their own world. But they want it all to be connected. Mm-hmm. But the connections just don't line up very well. So there's a huge project every comic fan has where they try to reconcile all of this in their head to figure out, like, well, what was Daredevil doing during the alien invasion when, like, a guy who can throw a stick and who's also blind...
Do you ever sit around and try to do this?
I've tried.
Do you do this while you should be, like, you know, spending time with your kids? And
I do it with my kids. They help out.
Really?
Yes.
They're big comic fans?
No, I just bore them with it.
Okay. Yeah, I know what that's like.
But what do you mean?
How about the next question, Jeff?
Batroc the Leaper.
All right, well, he leaps. He can jump over.
That one was easy. Yeah. Yes. And he is French, so they write, I am Batroc the Leaper.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a big, fake mustache.
His mustache is fake?
Well, it looks fake.
Oh.
It looks like a big, fake, you know, Johnny Depp mustache. Black Racer.
He's fast.
He's fast?
And he races black people.
I'll read you the description from Comic Book Resources. One of the bleakest Kirby characters is the Black Racer, who is a comatose Vietnam vet who lies in a hospital bed by day, and by night, he becomes the Black Racer and goes around doing death's duty and then returning to his comatose body when he's finished.
That sounds awful.
Yeah.
I'm envisioning this character just like bedridden, like that Metallica video.
Oh, yeah. Dalton Trumbo's Johnny Got His Gun. There's a lot of groups he created, like the Eternals and the Inhumans. I don't want to give you a group like that. I can give you a character from the Inhumans.
Okay.
Medusa.
Is it just Medusa?
Her name is just Medusa.
Like the snakes in the hair, right? Well, she turns people to stone.
That's what you would think,
yeah.
But he was creative. Her power is she has sentient hair. Her hair, which is like double the size of her body, can pick up things. So it can immobilize you in a fight.
No. It wasn't snake hair, it was just like regular hair?
Yeah. Yeah, just regular red
hair. Why even name her Medusa, then?
You need to name things after something. She had a friend named Gorgon, and Gorgon... I think he had like goat legs, and that was his power. And goat legs seems like a terrible power.
Yeah, what can you do?
Yeah, and he had,
power is my legs are tasty.
There's another guy named Karnak, just like mm-hmm. the Johnny Carson guy, but spelled slightly differently. And his power was very hard to describe. They just basically wrote him as he was a good fighter, but his thing was that he could always see the flaws in everything. So if you were about to attack him with a sword, he could find, like, the breaking point of the sword and hit the sword and shatter the sword.
It sounds very confusing.
Yeah. Yeah, because he was just written as a martial artist for a long time, and he would always be talking about, I see your flaw, which is like, shut up, I'm trying. I'm doing the best I can here, Karnak. You don't have to rub it in. I realize I'm losing to you, but don't be so supercilious about it.
You're a perfectionist.
Okay, this is going to be a tricky one. Sandman.
All right, but that's the Spider-Man villain.
Ah, we're not talking about the Spider-Man villain. We're talking about the DC version of Sandman. And where it gets tricky is that...
Puts people asleep.
A half-credit yes for that. Right. There was a 1940s Sandman character who had a gas gun, he called it, and he wore a gas mask. And he would shoot the gas gun and the criminals would fall asleep. And that was his thing. And then in the 70s, Kirby decided to reinvent Sandman, and he reinvented him as a superhero who lived in people's unconsciouses and fought nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
And then 20 years later, there was the
Sandman comic.
The Sandman comic that did this amazing retroactive continuity move by saying that the Sandman with the gas gun was inspired by the real Sandman who they're just making up. And the Sandman in the dreams was actually a dream who thought that he was a real character. So he was able to reboot the storyline, but not get rid of the other comics.
So that was one in the 90s, right?
That was the one in the
90s. That one I read.
Yeah.
I borrowed it from you, I believe.
I actually didn't have Sandman. I borrowed it from other people. I have it now because my wife had them.
I borrowed it from somebody.
There were plenty of people in college who were cool enough to have Sandman. Okay. Skrulls. Jack Kirby invented an alien race called the Skrulls. Tell me what the Skrulls could do, what their shared superpower was.
Magic.
Shapeshifting.
That counts.
That's not magic.
Shapeshifting is magic, yeah.
No.
It's not like that guy's only...
You could
like doing card tricks and showing people in half, but like...
You could do magical shapeshifting, but they were genetic shapeshifters. Mm-hmm. They worship a shapeshifting god who gave up his shapeshifting ability because that's how important the love of his life was.
All right.
Okay.
This is wonderful. Okay.
Last one.
All right.
The Kree, Supreme Intelligence.
I'm guessing they have Supreme Intelligence.
Yes. It looks like this guy. He's a 40-foot-tall, giant, floating green head.
Mm-hmm. There's heads?
Yes. Just a head. And he's the head of the Kree Space Fleet Empire. Also having a birthday this week, I'm making myself not talk about Jack Kirby nonstop, is Isabel Sanford.
All right. I know who that is.
Tell me who that is.
That is Wheezy Jefferson.
Okay, I was going to say, I'm thinking of Sanford and Son, but it's not that, but wait, 70s sitcom is still ringing a bell, and that's why.
Yes.
Yes, Wheezy Jefferson.
And?
And Sun Yat-sen was elected in China.
But more importantly, Wheezy Jefferson was born.
Yes. Or Wheezy Jefferson, as they would say in China.
Who I believe is a dragon.
Because it wasn't racist back then.
No.
Join us next week when we will talk about what's going on in September of 1917. Until then, ahoy hoy.
Ahoy hoy.